I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. New Orleans, Houston, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, and the state of Connecticut have all declared that they have effectively ended homelessness among veterans. The Obama administration set that goal for the country 5 years ago to end veteran homelessness by the end of 2015. There has clearly been progress, yet an estimated 50,000 veterans are still living on the streets and in shelters. Philadelphia aims to end veteran homelessness by November 11th, and that happens to be Veterans Day. Philly Vets Home is a collaboration between the federal government, city agencies, and nonprofits to provide housing for the homeless veterans in this city. We have three guests who have joined us in this hour of Radio Times, and let me introduce them to you. Ken Wilson is a veteran who struggled with homelessness for almost 2 decades. He's now a certified peer specialist at Pathways to Housing PA. Ken Wilson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Dennis Culhane. He's a professor of social policy at the University of Pennsylvania, also the director of research for the National Center for Homelessness Among Veterans. Dennis Culhane, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. As well.
Nice to be here.
And joining us from the NPR studios is Quill Lawrence. He's an NPR correspondent. He covers veterans issues, including stories about New Orleans and Los Angeles and their efforts to get homeless vets housing and support services. And Quill Lawrence, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
Quill, can I begin with you? What's the thinking behind this effort to essentially end homelessness among veterans by the end of the year?
This started with a pledge actually 6 years ago by then Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Eric Shinseki. And it came with a push from the White House and the beginning of a huge increase in funding. Under the Obama administration, they've tripled the funding for homelessness through the Department of Housing and Urban Development and through the VA. And they've applied it to a new set of best practices that have evolved over the years of dealing with this problem. And In that time when they tripled the funding, they've seen roughly a one-third decrease in the number of homeless veterans. So they're pouring money into it, but they're pouring it into a system that seems to be working.
Well, Quill, I heard your report about New Orleans essentially getting to this thing called a functional zero. What was so interesting to me, and you went out with some of the workers, they had a master list for one thing, and it seemed like they had actually developed a pretty trusting relationship with the homeless people in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, all of this money is coming from the federal government, but it's going to these people who, when you talk to them, they've been working on this issue for 10 or 20 years. And many of the people I went on outreach visits with in Los Angeles and in New Orleans, other places I've done this, they are veterans often, and they've often experienced homelessness at some point themselves, so they really know what they're talking about. But that list you're talking about, it comes down to the fact that there are maybe 50,000 homeless vets in the United States, which sounds like a big number. But when you go through the 50 states and you divide up, okay, we've got this many here. New Orleans had several hundreds that they could eventually actually put names on this list and then just go out and find these people. And it was a huge push. But by coordinating this list between all these different agencies, so nobody was trying, you didn't have three different charities chasing the same guy, updating it constantly with weekly or monthly meetings, you have the situation where I was going out and doing outreach with some people under a bridge in New Orleans, and they ran into a guy, and they were giving him the questionnaire. They're asking the different people living under that bridge that night, are you a vet? Have you ever served? And some people didn't want to talk about it. One guy said, yeah. So they sat down, started asking him questions. And when they got to his name, the outreach worker said, Ronald Emerson? I've been looking for, we've all been looking for you, Mr. Emerson. We've got you all set up. And because they had done the legwork on it, they had confirmed that he was a veteran, that he was eligible for VA housing. They got him into an apartment the next day. And I went to visit him there, and it's potentially going to turn the guy's life around.
I thought that was such a key point when those outreach workers said to this man, we've been looking for you. So not only was he on the master list, but someone was sort of caring enough to try to find this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at this point they've gotten down to where in New Orleans, where they've reached this functional zero, where they've got a small enough number of vets still on the street that they can – they know them by name, or the names will ring a bell. Now, there are still people becoming homeless every day, many of them vets from recent wars, or many people who were – experienced homelessness in the past slipping back into it. It's sort of a continuum. But, they the meaning of this functional zero is they've sort of preloaded housing for someone who newly becomes homeless. And within their target of 30 days, they should be able to get that person sorted out with some place to live.
Let me get our two guests who are here with us in Philadelphia in on the conversation. To you, Dennis, do we know how many homeless vets there are in Philadelphia?
The last time there was a count done here, it found about 400 people. It's an imperfect science, of course, and we know the number of over the course of the years is larger. But as Quill mentions, what localities are trying to do is both, you know, work on people who are long-term homeless, have been out there, and then set up systems to respond to people who are newly coming in who might not need the same intensity and level of support.
And to you, Ken, as Quill was talking about some of the outreach in New Orleans, yeah. I was looking at you and you had a look of recognition, yes, on your face. You were homeless yourself as a veteran and also now work with homeless veterans in this city. Mm-hmm. And is it a matter of, you know, we were looking for you? Can we say that in Philadelphia?
Yeah, in a lot of cases, that is the situation when we engage different individuals. They have been targeted already, and they realize that, hey, we've been looking for you. This, we've already set things up for you. We just didn't know where to find you. And then finding them, that just puts everything together. It all falls together for them.
Are there parts of Philadelphia where you're more likely to find a homeless veteran, or are they scattered across the
city?
Well,
predominantly, most of them tend to be in Center City. Only because a lot of the outreach is down there. A lot of your food banks are down there. A lot of different organizations are coming out to feed in the Center City area. So in West Philly and North Philly, most of them will migrate to the Center City area. And it's like a little family in all actuality.
Because they know each other.
They know each other, exactly, and are very protective of each other.
Let me go back to you, Dennis, and I'll go back to you, Quill. Mm-hmm. When we talk about functional zero, I guess the idea is the goal is, of course, to find housing and work and I guess treatment and social service supports for veterans, but knowing that they might be at risk for homelessness again.
Right. So about, relatively speaking, the people who do get placed in permanent housing, there's few who are actually returning to homelessness. About 5% perhaps of the people who get placed in the subsidized housing with the case management supports will actually come back into homelessness. But you do have people who are, maybe experiencing a crisis. You get them into a short-term housing arrangement, and that might not hold up. So there's a constant need to be paying attention to people's circumstances and knowing when to step in and provide more support. So it's a balancing act that goes on.
Quill, let me go back to you as you reported about New Orleans and their work, comparing that to Los Angeles, where I guess the highest number of homeless vets in this country. That's a bigger challenge, I guess, for that city.
Yeah, it's a much bigger challenge, and they've got roughly 7 people becoming homeless every day. At the rate they're going, the mayor there has already said they're not going to reach the goal this year, but he's going to keep pushing. And that's something that was really important. It was stressed to me by people who've been working on this for a long, long time, is that we in the media will say, oh, they've reached zero. They've declared victory. There's a war on homelessness. And certainly the White House will say, we've achieved this. And then their campaign will, mission accomplished and move on. This is what the activists have been telling me. But the people on the ground know that this is a constant effort, that it's going to keep going on. After they've declared zero, they have to keep working just as hard to stay at zero. And I found that these activists, they weren't really all that bothered by the semantics and saying, oh, this is zero, this is functional zero. What they were worried about was that sort of mission accomplished, let's move on now. And one told me he'd been raising money for an event for homeless veterans in Houston, a thing called a stand down. They set up this pop-up tent city and they get everyone in for 3 square meals and new clothes and all these things. And they've been going on for decades. He was trying to raise money for this event in Houston, and one of the donors he usually went to said, hey, wait a minute, Houston just declared we've reached zero. Wow. So why do you need my money? And that really scared him. They're afraid that people don't understand this has got to be a constant process. This level of commitment has to be consistent. Mm-hmm. It was declared as an aspirational goal by then Secretary of Veterans Affairs Eric Shinseki 6 years ago, and he wanted everyone to just really work hard on it, which they've done. But the idea that it's going to end as a problem is something that really concerns the people I've spoken with.
Does that concern you, Dennis? The idea with mission accomplished, then this, I saw something like $1.5 billion either has been spent or earmarked for this, that might go away?
Well, I suppose that could be a concern. But I think when you look at it more broadly, the two main components of the VA's effort to end homelessness have included, one, a whole round of Section 8 vouchers, housing choice vouchers. There are 70,000 of those that are out. Those are designated for veterans, exclusively for homeless veterans. And they turn over roughly about 15% a year. So you've got about 10,000 new slots effectively every year that are available to be used. And I don't think that the Congress is going to be cutting those. And there, in fact, there's a proposal to add another 10,000 this year. The second program is a program called Supportive Services to Veteran Families, and it's basically a housing stabilization and rapid rehousing program for people who are experiencing short-term homelessness. And that program is budgeted at about $300 million and serves this year. It'll serve about 100,000 people. And it's so successful, and the communities so really appreciate it. It's very flexible resources. Very practical, problem-solving oriented program. The providers really find it very fulfilling. I don't see the political will pulling back from that program either. So with respect to those two programs, I think that we're okay. But, of course, anything can happen. It's obviously a political environment.
And, Quill, about a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, this goal is to end this homelessness among veterans by the end of this year. Is that realistic?
Well, I think most people in the community around homelessness issues realized, again, that this was an aspiration. It was an idea to get everyone working hard toward a goal that maybe would never be reached. But the people I've spoken with were very pleased and impressed with what was accomplished. There are still some corners of the community that they're concerned about, people who have less than honorable discharges, people who got kicked out of the military are one of the hardest communities to reach because they're not always eligible for some of these vouchers. But these activists, a lot of them veterans, a lot of them who'd been through homelessness, who I met on the ground, they were really amazing in their mastery of the different kinds of vouchers that they could get to these people, the different ways to get someone indoors. They knew the system well. If they couldn't get someone an SSVF voucher, what Dennis just mentioned, then they figured, oh, I can get them Section 8, or actually I know where I can get maybe a discharge upgrade, that thing. So they're working at it very hard.
Well, Quill Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, and nice to be with your other guests.
Absolutely. Quill Lawrence, NPR correspondent. He covers veterans' issues. Our other two guests staying with us for the rest of the hour, Dennis Culhane and Ken Wilson. We're talking about efforts to end homelessness among veterans. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Philadelphia, like a number of cities, aiming to get housing for the veterans living on the streets, living in city shelters. In this city, hoping to do all of that by Veterans Day, November 11th. And we're talking about an effort and a call some 6 years ago by the Obama administration to end veteran homelessness by the end of this year. Let me just quickly reintroduce the two guests who are staying with us for the rest of the hour. Ken Wilson is a veteran. He struggled with homelessness for almost two decades, and he's now a certified peer specialist at Pathways to Housing PA. Dennis Culhane, professor of social policy at the University of Pennsylvania, also the director of research for the National Center for Homelessness Among Veterans. And to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes at WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ken, let me go to you, and I'd love to have our listeners know a little bit more about you. You were in the military. You were stationed in Germany for a number of years.
Yes, I was.
And it sounds like even going into the military, there were some things that you personally were struggling with.
Yes, prior to going into the military, I was curious about drugs. But even before that, I had some issues, childhood trauma that I had experienced for many years that I was unable to share. And
had to keep all that inside.
Yes, yes. And because I did that, it came out in other ways. I had a lot of nightmares and daymares, and I thought that the best way to handle those were through drugs because it numbed me. It stopped the dreams. It stopped the nightmares and daymares. So going into the military, I went into the military with some unresolved issues. And while I was in the military, I did well because I was being so physical and active. So at that time, the dreams and daymares stopped just because I was being so physical.
And being busy, I guess, too.
Exactly. So by the time I hit the bed, I was just out of it.
And it sounds like once you left the military, I guess, came back to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. you got involved in crack cocaine.
Exactly.
I mean, it sounds like you really went down,
yeah.
down when it
yeah.
came to addiction.
Yes, I did. Because I had that... that mindset of wanting to experiment when I came home, that was in the height of the crack addiction, the epidemic, 1985. So when I came home, that was the new thing that was going on. And after coming from Germany and experiencing all types of drugs over there, I just knew I can handle it. Little did I know this would just change my life.
And how many, I mean, I know you were sort of in and out of, sounds like jail during this time period.
Yes, yes.
In and out of what, shelters?
Shelters and jails was my life. I used to live and live to use. Whatever I needed to do to get the drug, to get my fix, that's what I would do.
Thefts? I mean,
thefts,
sort of more like petty crimes?
Yes, than- yes, yes. Nothing, it's all serious, but petty crimes, selling drugs, whatever I could do without hurting someone else, if you will. I think I was most danger to myself. Didn't want to hurt anyone, but just wanted to get what I felt I needed at that time, which was the drug.
I want to get back to that, but let me turn to you, Dennis. And I realize, I guess, every homeless veteran has a story, their own personal story. Are there people that are at risk?
Well, there are many people at risk. One of the things that the VA is doing now that it's relatively recent, started only a couple of years ago, is we screen every person who comes to the VA Medical Center for health care. There's a two-question screener that gets asked about whether or not they're concerned about their housing currently or in the future. And if they are screening is at risk for homelessness, they get engaged by social workers at the hospital and appointments are made to do a follow-up with them. So we're very much trying to pay attention to the people who are at risk because obviously that's a much larger group. But we do have this new program that's specifically designed to help, you know, do mediation with family members and landlords, help people with rent arrears or if they have some debts that can be taken care of. So there's a lot that can be done to help stabilize people.
And I mean, I have to say, and we've done programs about homelessness, especially and sometimes focusing on veterans. And I just have to say, it just breaks my heart to think that someone could serve as you did, Ken, but and folks that also served in combat, that somehow, I'm looking at you, Dennis, somehow can end up homeless. And I've probably passed them on the street here in Philadelphia.
Well, I think, as Ken said, what's interesting is that we don't fully understand why veterans are at greater risk for homelessness than the non-veterans.
Is that true?
And they are, about twice as likely. But part of it could be that there are, you know, people who go into the military have had childhood circumstances like Ken's indicating. They've had a difficult life. The military represents a way for them to get into a career track, get training, get housing, get some education. So the military represents an opportunity structure, if you will, for people who are disadvantaged. But And then there are, of course, for people who face combat, they have additional exposures that, you know, are going to make them susceptible to having mental health issues or other problems. And then there's the whole reentry in, back into society. People, that doesn't always go smoothly. Reconnecting with family or spouses, et cetera, doesn't always work. So it's very complex. There's not one simple pathway in, but we know that there are risks all along the way that are placing veterans at risk of homelessness.
Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, and you make such a valid point thinking about transitioning from military lifestyle and then coming back in here into society, the change. It's like a culture shock. And sometimes you kind of get lost in that transition. You would be surprised how many young soldiers are alcoholics. You know, it's legal. You can, you know, it's the way we just had fun. You know, that's what you had to look forward to. You know, so if you're going in with some unresolved issues, and then those issues are just building while you're in there, oh, you're mm-hmm. glad you're in the military, but this is the only recreation you have. You're in this foreign country, whether you're in Busan, Korea, or Germany, you know, the culture shock, you know. So a lot of times, you know, the soldiers come together, hang together, and that's what we do. We drink. So you're coming right out with that problem that you...
Well, I also think in some parts of the military, it's very regimented. You sort of know, you know, you kind of know what's happening one day after the other.
Yes.
Out of that, mm-hmm. if you're no longer part of that, then that time is your own.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, you were homeless for what, about almost 2 decades in Philadelphia?
Just about 20 years. Just about 20 years.
And was it living in abandoned buildings and shelters?
I think I went through early on in my homelessness. I didn't know what to do. I think you become a little street savvy, you know. So there was the times that I slept in the parks because I didn't know where to go. And then I start connecting with that homeless family I talked about, and they start telling me about shelters that you can go to. And then I dealt with that crowd and then transitioned into learning about moving into abandoned houses and turning these abandoned houses into what we call bandominiums. Like a condo, yes, like a condominium, and it's a whole lifestyle, and you become adapted to this lifestyle.
And does it feel like family in a way?
It does, because for me, I have an awesome family, but because I was not living up to family standards, my own shame, my own guilt, I would rather disassociate and not bring shame to my family. So I would go further as far away as I could possibly get and create a new family that could identify to what I was doing.
And families are places where people feel supported, they feel mm-hmm. known, whether they're living in these bandominiums or in an actual house.
Yeah, it's I think that it's the process is different for everyone, but certainly people who end up really long term experiencing homelessness, they're in and out of jails, shelters, things are very unstable. And so sometimes finding these affinities can help people survive. But I think we have to remember, too, there are people who, you know, are very alienated, some people who are not receiving any kind of treatment, might have actually severe mental health problems mm-hmm. and who are living quite apart, and that they're not getting community. And part of the whole recovery process that the VA, both through its services but also through these housing programs, is trying to recreate for people is getting people back into a community, right. mm-hmm. Becoming neighbors, getting involved in organizations, working if they can. So really, there's a whole reintegration process that for a lot of people, homelessness is, you know, just pulled them away from so many different things.
Well, we are talking about efforts nationwide and also here in Philadelphia to end homelessness among veterans. That's Dennis Culhane, also with us, Ken Wilson. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Ken, I was reading about you and you did a pre-interview with producer Debbie Bilder about your life. You were arrested 52 times. You had 47 convictions, and at one point a judge said to you, and I'm just going to quote here what I read, "Mr. Wilson, all of the staff at the prison are on your side, and they talk about how great you are. That is the only reason I'm considering letting you into a rehabilitation program, but this is it. This is your last chance." And whether that was like just the right person at the right time, somehow you heard that message.
Yes. Never forget him. I hope to see him again soon, Judge Ferber. Just a gentle, real man. Didn't see him as a judge at that time, just seeing him as an older gentleman giving me some great advice. He said that to me, and it just literally changed my life. I had never looked at the years that had gone by, and in the time that I had created this mess, people were doing the same thing and they were retiring from jobs. To me, that was mind blowing that I had spent that much time, that much time had got away from me. And I was just in a daze. When I went in to Veterans Court, I knew, I can't explain to you what was different at that time, but I knew my homelessness, my years of addiction, and all the hurt and pain that I had caused for myself and others was ended. And I promised that judge that he would never see me again and I would never step foot in a jail again. And I knew it was over.
And you never did.
And never did.
Dennis, you want to add something?
I was just going to say these veteran courts are actually a new initiative as well of the administration, and they're part of the overall homelessness strategy. So what we've done is a couple programs. One is there are these dedicated courts where the judges are reflecting on both the person in their military history but also access to VA services and seeing what can we do instead of a penal response. Can we get this person into a program, get them into treatment? So that's one component. The other is we have outreach workers who are inside the prison and inside the jails trying to identify veterans who are coming out so that they can, you know, a lot of whom are at risk for homelessness, to get them connected to services as well. So that's been a key part of the strategy because there is such significant overlap between justice programs and homelessness.
And it seems that – did you want to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it's so important to have those dots connecting. You know, a lot of times when you come out of prison, you only go back to what you're used to doing because you have nothing in place. So having that certified peer specialist or that outreach person in the prison preparing for your integration back into society, it is paramount. It helps because a lot of times you don't only know to do what you've been doing. You don't know how to even begin to change.
Well, I would also think as hard as it is to live on the street, it's also not easy to, you know, to have a place to live, go to work, take care of one's life.
Normal stuff.
But that's hard.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, everyday life is difficult and stressful, and you add on to it, you know, really deep poverty, the neighborhood conditions people have to struggle with in terms of the challenges, access to resources of all kinds. So, yeah, it's a very tough thing. One thing that I think is also worth noting, we're here focusing on veterans, and that's important. But, you know, homelessness among veterans isn't really different than homelessness among non-veterans.
True.
The one great thing I think that's happened as a result of this focus by the federal government is that it's proving to people that these interventions that have been developed and worked with veterans could work with non-veterans, and that we need to be thinking more imaginatively and proactively about you know, serving the non-veteran population too, because they share the same circumstances. There's not really fundamentally a big difference between homeless people who are veterans and homeless people who are not.
Yeah, and at Pathways to Housing, that's what we do. We have teams that focus on veterans. We have two veterans team. Then we have other teams that just focus on your non-veteran participants, you know, and it's awesome. And I have to just speak about from my standpoint of being a certified peer specialist. It's nothing like having that daily intimate support on a daily basis. It makes all the difference in the world to know that you have that person with that lived experience. It's totally different than having someone that has graduated bachelor's degree or their master's degree versus someone that has slept outside, who's overcome some addictions, who's been through some childhood trauma, and now is walking a different walk, and their lives has been changed.
Yeah, you're nodding your head, Dennis. I mean, it sounds like you need it all.
It's what a great testimonial. Yeah, the fact is that peers, people who've been there, are way more persuasive in trying to engage people than, you know, clinical professionals, as good as they are and as good as they can be. So I think it's just a key part of the picture, and it's just particularly true for veterans because the experience of military service for a lot of folks involves this certain camaraderie and a shared experience. And so that's been a key way to really engage people is really relying on the expertise of formerly homeless people who've been, you know, saved by some of these programs.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. I see some folks want to join our conversation. We're talking about an effort started by the federal government about 6 years ago to end veteran homelessness by the end of this year. A number of cities have gotten to what they call functional zero, and Philadelphia wants to end veteran homelessness by Veterans Day, which is November 11th. Talking with Ken Wilson, he's a veteran who is now a certified peer specialist at Pathways to Housing PA. Dennis Culhane, professor of social policy at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's the director of research for the National Center for Homelessness Among Veterans. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are talking about efforts both here in Philadelphia and across the country to end veteran homelessness, hopefully by the end of the year 2015. And again, our guests are Dennis Culhane, Ken Wilson, and we do have some folks that want to join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Something else I want to put out on the table, and perhaps, Dennis, I'll put this to you, which is this idea of housing first. And I think that's a new way of thinking about how to get people into houses, I guess, before dealing with some of these other issues.
Yeah. For many years, the philosophy that guided homeless programs was that they were very much a sort of 12-step oriented and clean and sober oriented programs. People were expected to go through a series of steps to effectively prove that they were worthy of getting into a housing program. And unfortunately for a lot of people, they could make it up all those steps. Right. And so few people persisted and were able to, quote unquote, sort of graduate, that the programs decided to turn that thing upside down, turn that philosophy upside down and say, you know, let's get people into housing first, and then we'll work on the issues and projects that people might have to go through. So, and it's worked out to be incredibly successful for people who have been on the street for many, many years, who some thought would never get into housing because they would never be able to handle and behave well in the housing. And instead, people end up succeeding, getting engaged in services, becoming good neighbors, and, you know, defying all of the conventional wisdom.
How did that work for you, Ken?
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I also went through that old module. And to give an example, when I received my housing, it was four gentlemen, including myself, that received housing. Presently, myself and another gentleman are the only two that's still in housing. It was so much structure. So you had to make meetings. You had to meet all these requirements in order to be eligible for this housing. Working at Pathways to Housing, we're a housing first model. And it's awesome to be able to tell an individual, hey, you deserved housing just because you're a human being. That's the, after we get you into housing, then we'll talk about whatever issues you would like to address in your life. What things would you like to change, you know, in your life? We see that once they get into their housing, then they can be more stable. A lot of the other issues that they had to deal with being homeless are no longer there. Now they can looking at begin taking their medication regularly. So we see some stableness in that aspect of just being regular, taking medication on a regular, but getting a good night's rest. Not because you made so many meetings, not because you didn't make or you don't qualify because you didn't, but just because you're a human, you deserve to be housed.
And have a bed and all those.
Exactly, and not sleep on the floor. And that was another thing. And just to add, when we moved into the four gentlemen, when we moved into our housing, that's what we moved into, an empty apartment. So you didn't have a bed. You didn't have any furniture. You just had an apartment. And with Housing First, there's so many different organizations and programs. We even have our own furniture bank where you can get you deserve to sleep on a bed and have a table to eat at and not sit on the floor.
Dennis, we were also talking during the break, or you were saying during the break, that people probably have a misconception about homelessness and maybe even thinking more of Ken, long-term homelessness, where there's a whole other population where it's really a different story.
Yeah, I think that our concept and sort of stereotypes about homelessness are based on who we see, the visible homeless on the street. And we know that, you know, people didn't just show up there yesterday, that they've been out there a long time. They've been struggling for a while. And that
sometimes people you recognize, too.
Yeah, and chronic homelessness, that's what that is. But the vast majority of people who actually experience homelessness, about 80%, experience what we call crisis homelessness. It's an average time period that they might be homeless is only about a month. And so one of the big parts of the federal initiative was we created a program specifically designed for people who might not need the equivalent of a voucher and long-term case management, but who needed crisis intervention. They needed someone to help them connect to services if they need it, but also, you know, solve problems with family members, because most people are coming from a family conflict situation, whether they're living with a partner or spouse or living with their parents. So a lot of it is negotiating some solutions there, getting people connected to services. And of course, these are very poor people. There's always financial issues. So the program helps to, if people need to relocate, we get first, last month's rent and security deposit. You can get up to 9 months of rental assistance in addition to that, so effectively a year. So, but it's not a long-term program. You're not in it for years. It's the average length of time people are actually in the program is only about 3 to 4 months. But it's really cost-effective. It's not expensive, and you know, really works with regard to this sort of, you know, crisis experience that most people have.
A couple of emails here from Nina. Are there any programs that connect younger homeless veterans with older veterans? And I'm looking at you, Ken. And I'm wondering, when we talk about veterans on the street, are we talking about people like you in your 50s? Are we seeing younger people as well, as across all generations?
We're actually seeing across. I see more older, but I'm also seeing more and more of the younger veterans being homeless as well.
And I guess younger may be coming back from our current wars or just current service in the military?
Right. About 15% of the veterans who are experiencing homelessness are, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq era veterans. So it's still predominantly people right now who are in their 50s. That post-Vietnam era group is the predominant group. But we do see, obviously, increasing proportions. One of the interesting things about that population is that in many cases we have women who are experiencing homelessness, and women very often have children with them. And the VA has never really been designed as a place for families. You know, the intervention is always the soldier, the former military personnel. It's not really designed to be family-friendly in that way. So that's one of the things that's been changing. The whole culture at VA has had to change because these new veterans are coming in, more women, more families and children. And our programs, these homeless programs, are also very much trying to be available and accessible for families.
In fact, an email from Kathleen says, if veterans have families, are families also helped with housing? And it sounds like the answer to that is yes. Ken, I'm curious about when you, let's say you see a guy or you learn, we'll call him a guy, a man who is a veteran, how do you begin that conversation? I mean, you know, you can't sort of jump, I'm assuming you can't just sort of jump right into whatever is going on with them, but how do you approach them?
Yeah, for the most part, food is always a thing that I use. I always invite a guy or a gal out to eat lunch. Let's go out. Let's go get coffee. Let's go get a donut. Let's go get lunch. You know, and that's like an icebreaker. As we're sitting there eating, you can begin to, you know, chalk up some conversation. I'm an open book. I always, you know, look for the opportunity to share my story because I know that, excuse me, once I kind of divulge that, it kind of lets the tension out, and the individual is now more susceptible to open up and share whatever it is they're going through, their present situation, things that they're looking to accomplish, where they're at this present time, what they're struggling with even. You know, when I share a guy, he looks at my exterior, and when I tell him, yes, I used to eat out of trash cans, I used to eat out the McDonald's dumpsters, I used to wash up every morning at McDonald's or whatever restaurant I can go in, lock the door and take a bird bath, he kind of realizes, wow, this guy. But once you look at the, sometimes when you look at the exterior, it kind of throws you off. You can't see me in that form, you know. So I have to verbalize it just to let that opportunity present itself where you feel comfortable sharing. And then after that, I find out if you like chess, if you like cards, whatever it is. I just want to not so much focus on the aspect of your homelessness, but just treating you like an individual. Let's just
talk. Who are you?
Who are you? You know, this is who I am. What do you like doing? Well, let's go do it. You want to go to the movies? Let's go to the movies. So it's important that you create that atmosphere that the individual feels comfortable with opening up to you. So it may be a month of just different engagements, just hanging out until there's a breakthrough where that individual feels comfortable with sharing.
And how much is loneliness a problem for homeless people? I mean, you talk about this sort of band of brothers in a way, but beyond that.
But beyond that, it is. Everyone, basically, not everyone, but majority of us has, as Dennis said, family. Yeah. You know, so you don't have that individual that family unit that you can really connect with. You have this substitute family, but you're kind of like not really letting them into that inner core of who you are. So you're kind of masking. But loneliness is a big, big issue.
Yeah, yeah. Dennis, anything you want to add to that? I mean, these are sort of existential questions in a lot of ways.
Right. I mean, it's interesting to, you know, myself and the group I work with, the staff at the National Center on Homelessness Among Veterans, you know, we're dealing with statistics and with, you know, policy issues and programs and understanding how the money flows and how it's working. But you know, when you hear the stories of people who are going through this, you understand how painful this is. You know, it's not just a political or social issue. It's a deeply personal experience for people. Becoming homeless usually involves some kind of trauma for folks because it happens in the context of family and loved ones. And then all the things that happen to you by virtue of being out there and exposed, you know, victimization, abuse that can occur, just the dehumanization of being destitute in a wealthy society.
Sure, sure.
So it's a very multifaceted problem with so many different dimensions to it.
You know, and it seems like, I don't know if I'm right in saying this, but I feel like everybody wants to connect to someone.
I think
everybody
right.
wants to feel connected to someone. It's just how we go about opening up that individual, allowing that individual to share who they are and creating an atmosphere that they feel comfortable in doing so in the time frame that they feel comfortable, not in our time. Sometimes we have our own agenda on what we want to get accomplished with this individual. You know, I want to be the hero. I want to be the one to help you. But it has to be in that individual's time frame in which they feel comfortable to open up to you.
You don't have to answer this, but how do your parents know what you're doing now? I mean, how are you connected?
I'm almost certain that mom and dad and sisters are listening to this radio station.
Oh, really?
Right now.
Oh.
My family has been so supportive through my ups and downs. Just an awesome, awesome family support. Went through the time period where they were enablers and then learned about what they should and should not do, and continued to keep me in their love and in their arms, but at a distance, mm-hmm. and allowing me to go through what I needed to go through. I can't begin to tell you the joy that my parents and family experienced at my first housewarming.
And you own a house
me.
Now.
Yes,
yeah.
yes. So to see them get teared up and welled up and saying, wow, it's finally over. You know, just grateful.
Well, I do hope that they are listening.
Yes.
A couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye. And Dennis, there's something like 50,000 veterans currently across the nation who are either on the streets or in shelters. Is there any sort of special effort to deal with this group of homeless people, or is it using the system that's been put in place and just reaching out to these people in particular?
I think that the systems that have been put in place to, you know, we can house 15,000 people into, you know, vouchered housing with case management. We can do upwards of about 80,000 of these crisis intervention housing placements each year. So you're looking at, in just in terms of housing placements, we're close to 100,000 housing placements that we can do or stabilizations each year. And so, you know, we think we're approaching and maybe very near the scale that we need to be to solve the problem. But, you know, it's quite variable across the country. Serious, serious problems, as Quill noted earlier, in right. Los Angeles, in Florida, you know, where more than half of the population is unsheltered. You know, it's something we just don't see and, you know, experience as much in Philadelphia or in the Northeast and Midwest, where, you know, only 10-15% of the homeless might be unsheltered, whereas down in those areas, you know, more than half, three-quarters of the population is living outside. That's a different challenge. That's a much more complex stage of disenfranchisement, if you will. So we have to fine-tune these programs geographically. We have to always be looking for how we're going to improve them and make sure that we're meeting the need. But, you know, in terms of scale, I think the encouraging news is that the Congress has been very responsive. The president has been responsive. And, you know, we have such significant new resources that we are making an impact.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Dennis Culhane is a professor of social policy at the University of Pennsylvania. He's also the director of research for the National Center for Homelessness Among Veterans. And thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times. Mm-hmm. Ken Wilson, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story and for the work that you're doing as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Again, a veteran. He's struggled with homelessness for about 2 decades now. And he is currently a certified peer specialist at Pathways to Housing PA, bought his first house, and joined us on Radio Times. We began our conversation with Quill Lawrence. Quill is an NPR correspondent who covers veterans' issues. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program, including how to download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.